There's a place in American West where history hasn't been erased. It's just been left behind. High in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, tucked into Chalk Creek Canyon, that's a mouthful, sits a town that looks like much the same as it did more than a century ago. The buildings are still standing, the streets are still laid out, and many of the details that define daily life are still in place. This is St. Elmo, one of the most intact ghost towns in the country. It began as a mining settlement during Colorado's late 19th century boom and grew quickly into a busy mountain community, and then declined just as steadily when the resources that sustained it began to run out. Today, it's remembered not only for its history, but for the stories that seem to have followed it into the present. Welcome in to the Ominous Archives. Welcome back, everyone. As you all may know, I am Nick.
And I'm Matt.
I was going to say welcome to the Ominous Archives, but I already
did. Welcomed you.
Yeah. News. Within the next week, I think our store should be going.
Yes.
I have stuff set up. I just have to make the time to click the button. So.
Soon.
Soon. I think we've been saying soon for a while now, but I promise soon.
Everybody does it. It's okay.
Yeah, right? We'll have, it'll be small at first. We have some things. I think we have some stickers, some mugs. I think we have a hoodie is like one of our bigger items. A hat, maybe two hats. I'm up in the air.
It's good stuff.
But yeah, so we have some stuff coming out in that aspect. News-wise, I mean, the weather's breaking.
Yay.
As of this recording, the Flyers are still in a playoff spot.
Don't jinx this now, Nick.
But yeah, I think that's pretty much it, you know?
Yeah.
Finally the warmth is coming in. It's a good time to do a ghost town.
I love a good ghost town.
Right? Probably haunted. Anyway. The town itself sits about 20 miles southwest of Buena Vista. A narrow mountain road winds into the Chalk Creek Canyon. After roughly a half an hour, the landscape will open up just enough to reveal St. Elmo. Today, about 40 preserved buildings remain, including wooden storefronts and public structures, all arranged along a simple dirt road. You'll find a saloon, a combined courthouse and jail, one-stop shop there, a mercantile, and several private homes. Unlike many ghost towns that have deteriorated into little more than foundations, St. Elmo remains remarkably intact. It's accessible year-round, even in the winter, which is rare for a site at this elevation. In the summer months, the general store still opens to visitors, continuing a tradition that dates back to the town's earliest days. At a glance, it can feel less like a ruin and more like a place that was kind of paused.
The area that would become St. Elmo was first settled in 1878 as prospectors moved into the region in search of gold and silver. By 1880, a formal town had been established. Originally called Forest City, the name didn't last. When the local post office rejected it due to the duplication with other towns, one of the founders, Griffith Evans, selected a new name inspired by a novel he was reading at the time called St. Elmo. From the beginning, the town was built to support mining operations in the surrounding mountains. It was laid out under harsh conditions, reportedly in deep winter snow, and developed quickly as more people arrived in search of opportunity. By 1881, the population had grown to about 2,000. St. Elmo had become a fully functioning town, with businesses, services, and infrastructure to support both miners and their families. The arrival of the Denver, South Park, and Pacific Railroad that same year accelerated its growth even more. A station was established in town, connecting St. Elmo to nearby mining sites like Hancock and Romley, and linking it to the Alpine Tunnel, one of the highest railroad tunnels ever constructed at the time. With rail access, supplies, equipment, and people could move in and out efficiently, turning St. Elmo into a central hub for the region.
And at its peak, St. Elmo was a busy and at times chaotic place. The town included multiple hotels, several general stores, a telegraph office, a schoolhouse, two sawmills, and a weekly newspaper, The Mountaineer. Which, why wouldn't you call your newspaper The Mountaineer?
You know, I feel like it just had to be called The Mountaineer.
Yeah, it just fits.
It fits.
There were also numerous saloons and dance halls reflecting the largely male population drawn to mining work. Mining operations in the area were extensive. More than 150 patented claims surround the town, producing gold, silver, copper, and iron. The most productive sites were the Mary Murphy Mine, Teresa C., Molly, and Pioneer. The Mary Murphy Mine, in particular, stood out. Located high above the town, roughly 2,000 feet above the railroad, it was the most successful in the district. At times, it shipped between 50 and 75 tons of ore per day to nearby smelters. Over its lifetime, it produced an estimated 220,000 ounces of gold, along with significant amounts of other metals. Despite that productivity, life in St. Elmo was far from easy. Winters were long and severe, with heavy snowfall that could isolate the town for extended periods. Supplies depended heavily on the railroad, and any disruption could quickly create shortages. Still, the promise of wealth kept people there. For many, the risks were worth it, at least for the time.
Like many mining towns in the West, St. Elmo's success was closely tied to the resources that sustained it. In 1890, a fire destroyed much of the business district. Although parts of the town were rebuilt, it never fully recovered from the damage. Around that same time, some of the most productive mines began to show signs of depletion. The decline continued into the early 20th century. The closure of the Alpine Tunnel in 1910 marked a significant turning point, limiting transportation and reducing the flow of materials and workers through the area. Mining operations slowed further in the years that followed, and by 1925, the Mary Murphy Mine and the district's primary source of gold shut down. Transportation soon followed. Railroad service to the area ended in the early 1920s, and by 1926, the tracks had been removed entirely. The route was later converted into a road, but by then, the town's economic foundation had already eroded. As jobs disappeared, so did the population. Businesses closed, homes were left behind, and St. Elmo gradually emptied. By the late 1950s, it was considered a ghost town.
Even as the town declined, a few residents chose to stay. Among them was the Stark family, who had arrived in 1881. When Anton Stark brought cattle to the area and decided to settle there, he took on work connected to the mines while his wife, Anna, managed both a general store and the Home Comfort Hotel, one of the more predominant establishments in town. The family became well known locally. Their hotel had a reputation for cleanliness and well-run operations. Their store was considered one of the better-stocked businesses in the area. They also lived somewhat apart from the rest of the community. Anna Stark was known for maintaining strict control over her household, limiting her children's interactions with others in town, while St. Elmo developed the typical social environment of a mining town, complete with saloons and nightlife, the Stark family kept to themselves. After Anton's death and the town's continued decline, the family adapted as best they could. They attempted to sustain themselves by leasing cabins to visitors and continuing to operate the general store. Even as fewer people passed through, eventually, only two members of the family remained in town, siblings Tony and Annabelle. They lived in St. Elmo without modern utilities, maintaining what was left of their property as the town around them emptied. Over time, their lifestyle grew increasingly isolated, and their situation drew the attention of outsiders who passed through. Annabelle, in particular, became a recognized figure in the later history of St. Elmo. Accounts from visitors describe her as protective of the property and deeply tied to the town where she had spent most of her life. By the mid-20th century, St. Elmo was no longer a functioning town in any conventional sense, but it wasn't entirely abandoned either. A few people remained, and some stories suggest that not all of them left when the last residents finally did.
By the time St. Elmo had largely emptied, only a handful of people remained. Annabelle Stark was one of them. She returned to the town in the early 1920s after a brief marriage and spent the rest of her life there. As the years went on and the population continued to shrink, Annabelle and her brother Tony became two of the last full-time residents. They lived without electricity or indoor plumbing, maintaining what they could of the old hotel and general store as the town around them faded. Accounts from people who encountered her during those years describe someone who was deeply attached to the town and protective of what remained. She was known to carry a rifle and keep a close watch on the property, especially as fewer people passed through the area. Later descriptions, particularly from locals and writers, portray her as increasingly isolated, with a worn appearance that earned her the nickname Dirty Annie. That image, whether entirely fair or not, became central to how she would later be remembered. Annabelle died in 1960, decades after most residents had already left, and over time her story began to shift. From one of the last holdouts in a dying town to something more closely tied to the town's reputation for hauntings. Historically, it was known as a mining town that declined as the industry declined. But as more visitors began passing through in the mid-20th century, a different kind of story began to take shape. One built on personal experiences, local accounts, and word of mouth. There's no official record confirming paranormal activity in St. Elmo. What exists instead is a collection of anecdotal reports or stories repeated by visitors, part-time residents, and later writers. Those stories aren't documented as fact, but they've become a defining part of how the town is understood today.
So, over the years, a handful of specific incidents have been repeated often enough that they've become closely associated with St. Elmo, particularly with the Old Home Comfort Hotel and the Stark family. These accounts are presented as they've been told, and like most ghost stories, they rely on personal experience rather than verifiable evidence. The first story, The Children in the Hotel. One of the most commonly shared stories takes place not long after Annabelle's death. The hotel had passed to a family friend, and at one point, their grandchildren were playing inside one of the rooms. According to the account, all the doors in the room suddenly slammed shut at once, and the temperature dropped sharply by nearly 20 degrees. The children reportedly panicked, crying and trying to get out, until the room gradually returned to normal and one of the doors slowly opened again. After that, they refused to go back inside. Another story involves a woman in her 20s who had taken on the project of cleaning and repairing parts of the hotel. she and a group of friends would spend their days clearing out rooms, washing the walls and floors, making small repairs, and at the end of each day, they would neatly store their tools and supplies before leaving. When they returned the next morning, those same tools would be scattered across the floor. At first, they assumed someone else had entered the building. To test that, they began locking everything inside a closet before leaving. Even then, they would return to find the tools removed and scattered throughout the room again. According to the account, this continued multiple times before they eventually gave up trying to explain it. One of the more detailed sightings comes from a woman skiing through St. Elmo in the 1970s. As she moved down Poplar Street near dusk, she noticed a woman standing in a second-story window of the old hotel. The figure was described as young, wearing a long dress, and looking outward toward the street. What stood out immediately was that the building was supposed to be empty, and the owner was away at the time. The skier followed the direction of the woman's gaze and saw a group of snowmobilers approaching. Since snowmobiling wasn't allowed in the area, she went to speak with them and asked them to leave, which they did. When she turned back to the hotel, the woman was still there. According to the account, the figure lowered her head slightly, nodded, turned away from the window, and then disappeared. The next day, the skier returned with the property owner. Together, they checked the building and found that all the doors and windows were still locked, with no signs that anyone had been inside. Across these stories, a consistent idea appears. The figure associated with Annabelle isn't typically described as random or threatening. Instead, she's often framed as watchful or someone who remains tied to the property and reacts to the activity around it. The interpretation lines up with how she was described during her lifetime: protective, observant, and deeply connected to the town. It also helps explain why so many of the reported encounters involve the hotel and general store, places where she was known to have managed and lived in for years.
Most of the reported activity in St. Elmo centers on the two buildings most closely tied to the Stark family: the Home Comfort Hotel and the General Store. These structures were the center of daily life when the town was still active, and they remained in use long after most others had been abandoned. As a result, nearly all recurring stories are tied to these spaces. Visitors and part-time residents have reported sudden temperature drops in certain rooms, sometimes without a clear environmental cause. Others report hearing movement, similar to footsteps on wooden floors or shifting sounds in adjacent rooms, only to find no one there when they check. The hotel accounts are the most detailed. In addition to the stories about doors slamming and tools being moved, there are reported claims that the interior never seems to stay the way it was left. Items that are organized at the end of the day are sometimes found out of place later, even when access to the building is limited. The general store had its own reputation. People who've spent time inside have described a persistent feeling of being watched, particularly when standing near the counter or in the back rooms. Some accounts also mention faint, unexplained noises that are subtle enough to question but consistent enough to be remembered. None of these reports are formally documented or verified. Still, they come up often enough from different people over time that they've become closely tied to the identity of these buildings.
The stories connected to St. Elmo didn't appear all at once. They developed gradually, shaped the combination of first-hand accounts, local storytelling, and later retellings in books and regional history collections. What makes this case stand out is how consistently those stories center on one person, Annabelle Stark. Annabelle was one of the last full-time residents of the town, living there decades after most people had left. That alone makes her unusual in a historical record. But over the time, her role in those final years took on a second life in local folklore. Accounts describing her as protective of the property, carrying a rifle, watching over the buildings, confronting trespassers, became the foundation for how she is portrayed in later stories. Instead of being remembered only as a resident, she became associated with the idea of someone who never fully left. From there, they reported experiences, like door slamming, objects moving, and sightings in the hotel, started to follow a pattern. They weren't random. They were tied to specific locations and often interpreted through that same lens, a present connected to the property itself. In St. Elmo's case, the history provides the structure. The stories fill in the rest.
Today, St. Elmo is one of the most accessible historic sites of its kind in Colorado. Visitors can walk the main street, explore the exterior of preserved buildings, and get a close look at what a late 19th century mining town actually looked like. The general store still operates during the summer months, offering snacks, souvenirs, and a connection to the town's past. The area is open year-round, which makes it a popular destination even in winter when snow covers the buildings and the surrounding mountains. In warmer months, it also serves as a base for hiking and off-road travel and provides access to nearby historic sites like Hancock and the Alpine Tunnel area. Some properties in town remain privately owned, and while many structures can be viewed from the outside, access to the interiors, especially the hotel, is typically restricted. There aren't formally regularly scheduled ghost tours, but the town is often included in regional history tours and self-guided visits. Because of its condition and accessibility, St. Elmo attracts a mix of visitors, history enthusiasts, photographers, and people interested in its reputation for hauntings.
St. Elmo is a place where the historical record is clear, but the interpretation of what remains is less certain. It was a mining town that grew quickly, declined steadily, and was never fully erased. The buildings are still there, the layout is still visible, and many of the details that define daily life have been preserved. The stories attached to it, especially those connected to Annabelle Stark, are hard to measure. They rely on personal experience, repetition, and the way people interpret a place that already feels unsafe. Whether those accounts are taken literally or not, they've become part of how St. Elmo is understood. So thanks for listening down here in the Ominous Archives. Our team member Sam wrote this episode, and you can go check out her own podcast at Scare Me Sam. If you're looking for a new horror book or anything, that's what she does. She likes to review those. And if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to go and follow the Ominous Archives on your social medias. I'd say all of them, but I don't think we are on all of them at this point. Or if we are on them, we're not very good at
Facebook, that's for sure.
Yeah, no Facebook. We're there on TikTok. We're just not. I'm just not good at making posts for TikTok. But anyway, or email us. Our email's everywhere. It'll be in the bio. Not bio. It will be in the episode description. So if you have your own creepy story that you want to share with us or anything like that, feel free to reach out. Until next time, stay weird and stay haunted. See ya.
See ya.